Welcome to the Frictionless Innkeeper podcast series. Our show is brought to you by the Frictionless Guest app, which allows innkeepers to provide guests with their recommendations of the best local places to eat, play, and shop during their stay. The Frictionless Guest app is accessible through all mobile and desktop devices, and you can learn more about it by visiting frictionlessguest.com. Once again, that's frictionlessguest.com. I'm Matt Langan, and I'll be joined by Steve Short, the founder and CEO of the Frictionless Guest app. And today we're speaking with Monica Edwards, who is the owner of the Moorhead Manor Bed and Breakfast in Durham, North Carolina. She also runs the African American Association of Innkeepers International, also known as AI, and has other previous B&B association experience. And Monica will be sharing her insights into both being a B&B owner and her experiences in the association arena. And Monica and Steve, how are you both doing today?
I'm great. Glad to be here.
Excellent. Excellent. How are you doing, Steve?
Doing well as usual, Matt. Thanks, Monica, for being here with us. We appreciate it.
Awesome. All right. Well, let's kick it off. So, Monica, let's start at the top, if you don't mind. Please tell us a bit more about your background and how you came about to be an innkeeper.
It actually was a fluke. Most people ask me, was this my lifelong dream of being an innkeeper? And I would have to say no. I did not know anything about innkeeping or bed and breakfast before 1995. Just on a fluke, my husband was given a gift certificate for us to stay at a local B&B. And he surprised me with an overnight stay there, which is on the other side of town, actually, from where we live right now. And I just thought it was the greatest thing since sliced bread. Since we've been together, we've always had people living with us, and we've planned some pretty good parties. And when I stumbled onto a bed and breakfast and said, oh, wow, we can do this and get paid, I was like, let's try this. And so from 1995 until 1996, whenever we traveled, we stayed at a B&B. And we would take informal notes and say, when we have our B&B, we'll do this. We won't do this. But we only thought that we're only going to be able to have a B&B when we were retired. And I say that because most of the people that we met on our innkeeping journey or in staying journey were people who had retired and opened in. So as 30-year-olds, we didn't think it was something that we could do at the time. But I went on to take a job that I wasn't very happy with. And we found the property and opened in 1997.
That's great. That's great. So what were some of the things, just out of curiosity, when you did your innkeeping journey, what were the things that you said, yes, we'll do this? And what were some of the things that you said, no, maybe we won't do that?
Well, one of the things that we were very surprised by, because typically I think that people come to B&Bs to get a better feel for the area. And who better to get that feel from than the innkeeper? And so we noticed that on several attempts when we stayed at inns, after the innkeeper would check us in, the only time that we would see the innkeeper again would be at breakfast time. And they were served breakfast, but they would never engage with the guest in the dining room or the breakfast room. So we decided that when we opened our inn, we would consider ourselves as ambassadors to our city. And we would sit down with our guests in the morning at breakfast time and, you know, kind of get an idea of some of the things that they were interested in seeing or doing while they were here. And maybe recommend restaurants and different things like that. So we're fully engaged with our guests.
That's great. And tell us a little bit about the property itself.
Well, we landed in a 1910 Colonial Revival style mansion, which is pretty much within walking distance to the center of the city. It's in a historic part of town called Historic Moorhead Hill, which is the area of town where most of the tobacco barons who founded Durham were living at the time. We're within walking distance to the Durham Bulls Ballpark, which is also called the American Tobacco Campus, and not too far from Ligon & Myers Tobacco Company, which was downtown. And the former owner of this house actually was one of the CEOs of Ligon & Myers Tobacco Company. We have over 9,200 square feet in the inn. All of our guest rooms are located on the second floor. We have 5 bedrooms with 5 baths. Downstairs are most of our common areas. And then we were also fortunate to have a carriage house, which has another 1,200 square feet above a 4-bay garage, which we're able to do events and things in that area.
That's great. Steve, anything else to add there before we jump into Monica's association work?
Well, you know, I could talk about historic structures all, you know, forever. But
wow, almost 10,000 square feet. Do you live at the B&B? I assume you do.
We do, as that's one of the ordinances that the city of Durham requires that we live on property. And that's what makes it so very interesting, too, when I started doing association working and diving into the different rules and regulations as far as bed and breakfasts are concerned, because certain cities or towns don't require that the innkeepers live on property, but Durham does require that. And given that the 22 years that we've been here, some of the things that have happened in the inn, I couldn't imagine what would have happened had we not lived on property.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can bet. Well, that's probably a good segue into talking about your various work with associations. And I think at least 5 or so years heading up the North Carolina Bed and Breakfast Association, right?
Yes, we've been very active in most of the trade associations associated with the B&B industry since we opened in 1997, especially North Carolina Bed and Breakfast and Inns Association. I've served in many capacities, the last being the president from 2014 to 2017 in heading up the organization and moving it forward. As most people know who have any relationship with associations, that the association arena has changed, especially in the bed and breakfast industry, because initially the association was more of a marketing association, and now it has become not just a marketing association, but more so an advocacy organization. So a couple of years ago, we partnered with the North Carolina Restaurant and Lodging Association to give us a larger voice when it came to being in front of the state legislators with regards to regulations and ordinances that have anything to do with the B&B arena.
Yeah, and I guess especially related to the short-term rental kind of thing, right?
Short-term rental, fire codes. I don't know if you remember, probably within the last 10 years or so, there was a situation in North Carolina that made it all the way to the national news where we had some people that perished in a lodging facility. Fortunately for us, it wasn't a bed and breakfast, but because it had to do with a gas leak and carbon monoxide poisoning. And because of that, our lovely politicians changed the rules and decided that they wanted to have CO2 detectors in all lodging facilities that had fossil fuel burning entities. And it was very invasive to the point where they didn't even want you to use sternos in a chafing dish without having, yeah. So they went overboard. And as sometimes politicians do, they're more reactive versus proactive and not in consideration of all the things that need to be looked at before you start putting those types of things in place. So we were fortunate to have North Carolina Restaurant and Lodging Association on our side to be able to help us with that, because most of the inns that are members of the NCBBI, as well as most bed and breakfasts, are in historic properties, and to have to put in a wired CO2/fire system in that is going to be very not cost efficient, and it would have put most of our members out of business had we had to put in wired systems to be able to detect CO2 as well as fire.
Wow, interesting. And you say that so the focus is more on advocacy versus marketing. It used to be then, I guess, that a lot of the marketing was online, where you were actually trying to help the bed and breakfast get direct bookings. Is that
Exactly. But that was when the internet was very young. And now the internet, there's lots of tech algorithms and things such as that that come along with your online presence. Before, when we had an association website, we could pretty much do pay-per-click and push it out there. So when people were looking for bed and breakfasts in certain areas of North Carolina or in North Carolina in general, the state association's website would come up, and we would always have a link to each of our members' availability, and you could click directly and do that. But now it's become cost prohibitive to do that because it costs so much as far as pay-per-click in competing with the larger entities such as Google Hotels, Expedia, Booking.com, and all the online travel agencies.
Right. Yep. Makes that more challenging. Anything more on the advocacy side of things that's worth talking about in terms of the North Carolina time that you spent working with them?
Well, when Airbnb first came on the scene, we actually went to Asheville because Asheville had done an extensive spreadsheet of looking at how many hotel nights they were losing to the Airbnbs in their area. And we were able to call a meeting with the local municipality, with the planning department, the zoning department, as well as the tax department, to try to figure out how to best nip that in the bud, because Asheville, fortunately, actually at the time had some very strenuous ordinances in place with regards to short-term rental because it is a tourist area, but there was no enforcement there. So then we had to call upon the innkeepers to call out those unregulated short-term rental properties that were renting and they should not have been renting.
Mm-hmm. Interesting that the ordinances were already there, whereas in most cases, what we've heard is that they weren't. So
exactly.
It was just enforcement. Yeah. Okay.
And cool. I think that when you have an area where it's a vacation area or a large touristy area, they're probably they may not be as strong as they need to be given the changes in short-term rental properties coming online. But when you have places that there was never a worry that people were doing this, that's when you have to rally behind the politicians or your local people to get them to put some policies in place.
Yeah, makes sense. Okay. So now you're involved with the African American Association of Innkeepers International. And talk about that, I guess, first, your involvement, but then also more importantly, I guess, kind of the whole mission and purpose.
Okay. Well, it's been in place probably since 1996, 1997. It was actually started by Doris Clark, who was an innkeeper that owned Twin Oaks Bed and Breakfast in Martha's Vineyard. And she was encouraged by the founders of PIE, Joanne Hardy and Pat Bale, to start this association because they're less than 1% of inns are owned by African Americans. And she felt the need to support this. And from that, the African American Association was formed. And pretty much the mission of the association is to make the public aware of African American owned inns across the United States and internationally. And what we do is we network with other innkeepers. We share resources and provide support to all of our members for anything, or we're there to answer questions or for people who currently have inns or people who are looking to start a bed and breakfast.
And you had, when we had an earlier call, you were talking about the fact that, I mean, basically part of this is educating African Americans about bed and breakfast, not just about the fact that, hey, not from an innkeeper's perspective, but from a guest perspective, right? That
exactly. And I would say early on, I think more people know about bed and breakfasts now because we have been pushed. Bed and breakfasts have been everywhere now. I think Wheel of Fortune was giving away bed and breakfast stays and things like that. But when we first came on the scene in 1997, there were very few African Americans that knew exactly what a bed and breakfast was. So part of our mission was also to make them aware that there are Black-owned bed and breakfasts and what it's all about.
Mm-hmm. And so 1% is a very small number. So why is that, do you think?
I would probably think, I know in most instances it has to do with the availability of capital or people having access to a property that can actually be used as a bed and breakfast or an inn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
And it's definitely not for the faint-hearted. Being an innkeeper is not for the faint-hearted. It does require lots of blood, sweat, and tears. And depending upon the size of the property, you may or may not have staff, which if you don't have staff, you're pretty much tied to your property. I won't say 365 days because you should structure it in such a manner that you have some downtime or you actually have some help.
Right. And do you have any help at all?
My husband and I currently run the inn. I am responsible for most of the day-to-day operations, but I do have an inn-sitter who helps out. And I've had interns from the local university that has a hospitality and tourism management degree.
Oh, wow. Okay. So the inn-sitter, meaning they're not there most of the time, but you can schedule them so that you and your husband can go away, let's say, on vacation?
Exactly. Exactly. Or even to help out, like if I wanted to go on a date night or if something came up, an emergency wise. Unlike most jobs, if you have an emergency, you can just call in and say, I'm sorry, I can't come to work. So as an innkeeper, you need to have backup in case there is a situation where you can't be at the inn to provide your guests with the ultimate guest experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now talk a little bit more about AI, as you call it, even though it's AAA, double I, right? So AI, talk about what they can kind of bring to the table. If I'm a Black innkeeper, why do I want to join AI and what are some of the benefits?
Well, the benefits are that we push out knowledge to our members. We also, when people are looking for an African-American owned inn, the African-American Association or African-American Inns website is going to come up in your Google search. So you will be able to see across the nation where the African-American owned inns are. So if you want to support an African-American owned inn, you'll have it right there in front of you.
And you find that that's been really helpful it's kind of like what we were talking about before with like North Carolina. It's kind of hard to fight the big Expedias and all of that. But yeah, has it been helpful then for people looking to support?
Yes, it's been very helpful because from time to time we've had local media outlets, and not just local, but some national media outlets such as Essence Magazine, The Root, Huffington Post, that for every now and then, when they're looking for a bed and breakfast, they are like, okay, here's some Black-owned B&Bs. And we've been ranked, they rank us just like you rank, TripAdvisor ranks B&Bs across the United States.
Interesting. Okay, cool. Good deal. Anything else about AI that you think is worthwhile sharing with us?
Well, I think that the inns in AI, just like all the inns across the United States, each one of them offers a unique experience. We do have one of our members who is Monique Greenwood, who owns the Aquaba Collection, and she has a collection of 6 inns, mostly on the East Coast in the northeastern area, that is her brand. And she's my hero as far as innkeeping her because she has 6 inns. And my hat is off to her for that.
Yeah, that's a lot to deal with. Cool. Well, let's, if we can, we're doing something new where we've kind of played with this a little bit in the past where we've had a question or two that we'll ask an innkeeper, but we've got 3 questions that we want to ask you to try to get for, I guess, where the innkeeping world is going. So the first one is, how do you define guest experience? How important is it to your B&B? What strategies or tactics do you use to address it and improve it?
Okay. Well, basically, I think of the guest experience as a totality of a guest's interaction with you from the time that they seek you out, starting with your website to the booking process to any communications that they have with you from the time they walk through the door to if you're in, what they see, what they smell, what they taste. And I think it's very important because that will determine whether or not they're going to come back to see you, number one, and whether they're going to tell other people about you. And the best advertising is word of mouth, I do believe. And you want your guests to have that great experience. So they're not only going to enjoy themselves, but they're going to go back to wherever their destination was and tell everybody about you and that you have to come and stay with Monica and Daniel at Moorhead Manor.
So what about in improvements or whatever? I mean, interesting, because you talked about when you all first started about what you wanted to do differently compared to what you saw of other places. Of course, it was right up our alley because, you know, of what we do with the Frictionless Guest app and its purpose. But what, you know, you've been doing this for what, 22 years now?
Mm-hmm.
How do you refine or try to improve things?
Part of it is staying up to date with the industry trends. And that means going to or attending the local, not just local, but the national trade conferences, because you have professionals there that are keeping up with the travel trends and what the guests want and what they don't want. Because when we first opened 22 years ago, one of the things we talked about was putting telephones in the guest rooms. And I know several innkeepers who went through the process of putting telephones in their guest rooms, and that's a whole nother expense. And now, because everybody carries a cell phone, guest phones in the guest rooms are pretty much obsolete. So those are the kinds of things you have to keep on top of. Your app, and per se, is like getting that information to the guests before they get here. Let them know when they're coming to town, what are the restaurants or sites that you recommend that they see. And if you can send that to them beforehand, they can plan their visit. Sometimes people consider, like, I think I've heard a couple of people in the industry talk about a cruise mentality, is that when a person is coming to your city, rather than them having to figure out where they're going to eat or what they're going to do, if you can provide them with, if you're going to be here for 3 days, here are the things that I recommend during your 3-day stay that you should do while you're coming to Durham that will enhance your visit here. So all of that. Things such as that.
Well, I loved your response when we were first talking about doing things differently and using the term ambassador, which we've kind of blogged about that and written some stuff about that. And also the fact that you said, you know, it's interacting and letting people know about what there is to do. So obviously that's close to our hearts anyway. So great. Okay. Question 2, if you could get an hour of time with a leading expert or consultant in the B&B industry, what are the 2 or 3 most important questions you would like to ask them?
Well, probably the first and foremost one is how to cost effectively compete with the larger online travel agencies so that I can get people to book direct and I don't have to pay the commission to the travel agencies to have people book through the online travel agencies. That's mm-hmm. the biggest one that comes to mind. And then where do you see our industry moving 10 years from now? Is there going to be mm-hmm. more technology, or are we going to be replaced with artificial intelligence? What can we do to continue to enhance the guest experience at our inns?
Now, and by the way, what percentage of direct bookings do you get?
Currently, I'm getting 90 plus percent.
Of direct bookings?
Of direct bookings, yes.
Wow, that's crazy high. So what do you attribute that to?
I guess the links that I have that are feeding my page, that are feeding people to my availability, a lot of it has to do with the press that I've gotten as being a member of AI. And people are coming directly from, I can see that people are, where people have listed me, they have a link directly from those pages that I can trace to my e-commerce site.
Okay. Yeah. And you were talking about in terms of, I mean, how many African Americans percentage wise come to your bed and breakfast, would you say? And do you think most of those are through or because of their desire to, you know, to stay at an African American B&B?
Yes. Most of the people, I ask them, how'd you find me? And they said, you know, African-American inns, or, you know, they heard they wanted to stay, they wanted to spend their money with their own culture. So they Googled African-American bed and breakfasts and found me. And I guess the longevity, the fact that I've been here for 22 years, people right. may not necessarily know me in the Durham area, but outside of the Durham area in across North Carolina, because we've been featured on a PBS North Carolina Weekends and Black Issues of Forums and different things like that.
Okay. What percentage would you
I would say 40% of our clientele is African-American, 60% is Caucasian or other.
Okay. You said that, Monique, it's like much higher.
Yes.
Is that right? With Waba. Yes. Okay. Good. And last question. What is the percentage mix of guests that stay at your B&B based upon the following three age groups? And more importantly, probably, how are those percentages trending? So we got under 40, we got 40 to 60. And over 60. So how would you break, you got 100% to work with. How would you break down, let's say, under 40?
I would say under 40, maybe 25%. 40 25? To 60,
okay.
Probably 45%. And then the last 30 would be over 60. But it's a little hard sometimes for me to tell how old people are, and I don't ask them their age.
Maybe
so it's just a guesstimation. And a lot of times, even when someone tells me that I'm retired, you can't really say that that person's over 60 because people are retiring at a younger age these days.
That's true. So under 40, 25%. That's, I don't know, that sounds, I guess, positive to me, I think. Well, let's ask about the trending, though. Are you seeing, is this the way it's always been?
No, I see that more people under 40 are coming to stay with us. And okay. I attribute that to maybe the guest experience.
Mm-hmm.
And when with the reviews in different places such as that, like when I guess different age groups use different places as far as their review preferences. And so the more reviews that you have, say, for instance, on Yelp, that may be what's trending to get me more people that are coming under the age of 40.
Well, there seems to be, you know, and of course, this is all just you and us, you know, an anecdotal, but it's always good to, that's the reason for the questions. It's like, we want to know what people are actually seeing, innkeepers
mm-hmm.
are seeing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there seems to be at least maybe more among the larger brand type publications that talk about hospitality. Everybody's like saying, okay, well, millennials want true experiences. And to me, and you know, my wife and I being bed and breakfast people for, you know, gosh, probably like 30 years now, 25 or so. Yeah, that was it for us. I mean, we always wanted to stay at a different place. We didn't want to stay at the franchise type place.
Uh-huh.
We wanted something different in smaller towns or whatever, just to see interesting sites we'd never seen before. So that makes sense to me. But that's what we're hearing about, kind of the millennial, that millennials want true experiences. And, you know, for the under 40 crowd, do you get a feel for that? Or you know,
I do, but I also think that some of it can be attributed to the fact that their parents took them to bed and breakfasts when they were growing up. So
mm-hmm.
that was their first experience, and it was something that they enjoyed. especially when they were able to get to an inn, not necessarily that was more of a Victorian style or antique style inn, something that had a little bit more of a contemporary or urban decor, where they weren't reminded that they were at grandma's house.
Yeah, the old get rid of the doilies approach.
Exactly. Right? And now you have to have technology in place. We don't have televisions in all of our guest rooms because that's part of our guest experience, because we want to give you something that you don't necessarily have at home. And most people have televisions in their home. So when you come here, be it for a getaway or romantic encounter, you're not going to be interrupted by the television in your guest room as a distraction.
Well, yeah, it's kind of that, I guess, sort of anti-hotel sort of approach, right? I mean, and it's funny when you were talking about the phones in the room. I don't remember staying at a bed and breakfast with a phone in the room, and it would almost seem foreign to me. Like, it would seem like I was in a hotel, you know, and it's almost like you don't want to do that. So, yeah, you want something, that's why you're there, is something different than
exactly
a hotel, basically. So, cool. Good deal. Anything else on the trend thing in terms of demographics or, you know, whatever?
No, I think that the location of your inn may also have to do with the age group of people that are staying with you, because we're within close proximity of the happening things that are going on in downtown Durham. And so people are able to walk. They don't have to necessarily, they can fly here because we're 15 minutes from the airport and take an Uber, and then are able to maneuver the city either walking. We have scooters. We used to have those bikes, and you can have Uber and you can maneuver the city pretty well versus having to rent a car and be stuck in a place at one particular time.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Good. Well, you survived the final round, the three question rounds.
Why, thank you.
Very, very insightful. Very insightful. We appreciate that.
Thank you.
Matt, you want to ask the final question of anything else and
sure.
wrap it up here?
Happy to do
to
it.
In there?
Yeah. No, I think we're good. I think we're ready for the ultimate question. Monica, anything else to add today? Anything we may have missed?
No, I just think innkeeping is a great profession. It definitely is a labor of love. It's not for the faint-hearted. And when I hear some of my guests tell me, this is what I want to do when I retire, I'm like, I don't know what your idea of retirement is, but this is not mine. But it's a great profession.
That's so funny. That's great. What a perfect way to end this episode. And our guest for this episode of the Frictionless Innkeeper podcast was Monica Edwards, who is the owner of the Moorhead Manor B&B in Durham, North Carolina. She also runs the African American Association of Innkeepers International, also known as AI. And Monica was kind enough to share her insights into being a B&B owner, her experiences in the association arena. And she was the first innkeeper to do our power three question lightning round at the end, and she aced that. And Monica and Steve, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me.